everybody, welcome to Central. My name is Jorge Alonso and I am an alcoholic. And you know, I kind of feel important today. My name is twice on the board, you know. That's never happened before. The important people here are the newcomers. You know, you are the ones that are important. I hope that what I'm about to say here, you know, might deter you from continuing with your drinking, you know, because I've already done it for you. So I'm going to tell you what it was like. You know, I am from Mexico City, and I'm 47 years old. I'll be honest with you, I've never felt better in my life. Not even when I was, you know, a teenager in my 20s or in my, you know, 30s. I got here when I was 33 years old. I wish it would have been sooner. You know, I've changed a lot of things since I came to AA. One thing I have not been able to change, and that's been my accent, you know. So bear with that, please. You know, I am the oldest of four children. And but my father, he was the youngest, you know, in his family. And the reason I say that is because all my cousins, you know, they're older than me, 5-6 years older than me. And that's on my father's side. On my mother's side, you know, my uncles, they're not that older than me. You know, they're also like 2, 3, 5 years older than me, and my mother's youngest brothers. And that's the crowd that I hung out with, you know, the wrong crowd, but they were, you know, my family, and I love them. But that's who I hung out with for many years. You know, my family in Mexico was very, very united. You know, there was always parties going on. You know, if it was not my great-grandparents, it was my grandmother's. And we were always together, you know. I remember that I was a very undisciplined kid, you know. The times that I got in trouble, you know, in school, it was because of bad behavior, you know, bad conduct, disrespectful towards my teachers and stuff like that, you know. I was a good student, you know, I have to say that, but that was the area where I had a lot of trouble with, and that got me into a lot of trouble. I've always said that disobedience is what got me here, and I believe that. So, you know, as I grew up, and I did a lot of things that at my age I was not supposed to be doing, really. You know, I learned how to drive at a very early age. You know, my cousins helped me. You know, and I did a lot of other things at a very early age that today I know that I should have never done that, but it's too late now. You know, I wanted to become a man. That's what I wanted to be, a man, you know, and I was hanging out with these cousins of mine and uncles that were older than me, and they liked hanging out with me, and they always took me with them. And I remember, you know, my first drunk, I was like probably 13 years old. And I used to race motorcycles. And I remember going outside the you know, Mexico City, the outskirts of the mountain, where the mountains are. And it was one of these rainy, ugly days. And I was practicing, you know, I was going around the track and getting all dirty and muddy, but I was having fun, and my cousins and my uncles, they were all drinking, you know. When I was finished with practice, I remember approaching the car, and one of them offered me a drink. They were drinking vodka and orange juice. And I said, well, sure, you know, why not? I want to be a man like them. And if that's what you got to do, well, why not? So I remember they gave me a half and half. It was a half vodka, half orange juice, you know. I'll never forget that. And I remember I didn't even have breakfast that morning. So, I drank that stuff, and I don't know. I've heard a lot of stories here, but mine is different in this case, you know, because in a matter of minutes, I was very, very drunk. You know, I couldn't even walk. I started staggering all over the place. You know, I started puking, you know, and I couldn't even walk, you know, after puking and being all filthy and dirty. You know, I asked one of them to take me to, there was a river nearby, so I could get cleaned up. I remember falling in the river, you know. They had to get me out of there. And of course, it's cold. They, you know, they remove all my clothing. They put me in the back of the, you know, in the rear seat of the car. And, you know, basically told me, you stay there, you know, and if you want to continue puking, you do it back there, you know. And I remember that I didn't like it, you know. I don't know. I said, is this drinking, you know, why are they doing this stuff? I really didn't enjoy it. And I wish I would have stayed away from it, you know. But at that time, I said, I don't know why they do it. I don't like it. I didn't like it. You know, I couldn't even drink orange juice for the next 6 months. After I had that. But the thing is that when you continue hanging out with these people, you know, well, it happened again. And the thing is that I didn't know what to do. You know, I felt like, well, how come they can do it and I can't? You know? And I said, well, then, you know, we read the part where we try different stuff. And I said, well, how about beer? You know, a little bit of a beer. And I did that, you know. And then what happened is I started building up my tolerance, you know, for alcohol. And I started with beer. I didn't touch vodka for a long, long time, but you know, I started with the beer. And of course, you know, I continue hanging. We would go on vacation together. And I wanted to do the same things that they were doing, you know. And I remember one time we went to Acapulco, and they took me out with them, you know, and they took me to the clubs. But of course, I'm a 13, 14-year-old kid, and they don't allow me inside the clubs, you know. And they're very strict about that in Acapulco. And I was really, really spoiling their night, you know, because we went to like 3-4 discos and the kid cannot come in, you know. And I was feeling bad, and one of them said, don't worry about it, don't worry, we'll find something to do. And we were drinking beer, and then one of them had the brightest idea to say, well, Jorge, you've never been with a woman, right? And I said, no. Oh, so we know where we're gonna take you, you know. And I'm like, wait a minute, where do you want to take me, you know? Well, they took me to a place called the Red Zone in Acapulco, you know? And of course, you know, I cannot say no, you know, I want to be a man. And they're like, are you ready for this? And I said, sure, come on, well, let's go, you know? I don't know what to do, you know, I had an idea what the hell was going to happen, but, you know. We get there, you know, and of course, you know, you see all these girls there, and I'm, you know, very, very fearful. And one of my cousins is like, we have a newbie here, you know. And all the girls, you know, the ones that heard, they're like, come over here, we'll give you a discount, you know. And I always wonder what the discount was. You know, I only paid $2, you know. I don't know, but you know. But see, I wanted to become a man, and those were the things that I, you know, that they were teaching me. And I was, you know, of course I would go back to school. I was like in secondary school, you know, junior high, what we have here. And I would tell my friends what I had been doing, you know. And then they were like, I was just bragging, really, you know. I've been doing this and that, drinking and with women, and, you know, I'm doing the real deal, you know. I'm becoming a man, you know. And I didn't know that this was going to get me into a lot of trouble, you know, to be honest with you. And I continue, you know, with hanging out with them. And I remember my father was the kind of person that he would make deals with me, you know. And one of the deals was that if I had good grades in school, he would give me anything I wanted. Anything. I mean, I'm talking about anything, a car, whatever, money, everything. My father was that, like that. He would not give me a kiss or a hug, but he would give me money. He would only hug me and kiss me when he was drunk. I didn't like that, you know, but that's something that happened. And I remember that the deal was that you pass, you know, without any problem, you know, and I'll send you to the United States to learn English. And I said, okay, you know, that's the deal. So I did pass. And then he told me that I had to look up a school, you know, and so I can go learn English. I found this school in the state of Kansas. You know, a lot of people ask me, Kansas, you know. But, you know, that's the one that I found, you know. It was a Benedictine school, you know, priest, Catholic. So I ended up going to that school, you know. And I was there for like a year and a half. But I remember they went to visit me. And of course, you know, you come to the United States, and I was used to wearing uniforms and clean cut, you know, haircuts. And I went to this prep school, and you were allowed to, you know, to grow your hair, and you were wearing jeans and stuff, no uniforms, you know, and t-shirts and stuff. So I, just like any other kid, you know, I would do what the others were doing. And I remember when my father seen me, he was like, wow, you know, hair this long, you know, and jeans and my t-shirts. And he looked at me, he said, you know, we're going to go to Kansas City, and I've heard that your mother told me that you need some clothing and shoes and all that. But he said, I'm not going to buy any of that stuff unless you, you know, cut your hair and change your clothing, you know. And of course, you know, rebellious that I was, hell no, you know. But I did. I had to do it, you know. But I'm just trying to tell you how disobedient I was, you know. And my two uncles came with them. So my parents rented a car. One night we asked my father if we could borrow it, and he said, yeah. And he told my uncle, no drinking, no, none of that stuff. Yeah. Well, you know, we were drunk. And one of my uncles was driving, and he said that he wanted to take a leak, you know. So I said, well, you know what, why don't you stop here, and, you know, you go out there and take the car for a spin, you know, go around the block and pick you up. Okay, good idea, you know. So we do that, and I don't know if the cops were already following us, or the thing is that they pulled me over. And, well, I was drunk. You know, I'm 14 years old. I don't have a driver's license, you know. They want me to do a sobriety test. I did. Failed. They take me to jail and do the breathalyzer deal. Failed, you know. Boom, they put me in the slammer for like 3-4 hours, you know. And, well, of course, you can imagine my parents are pissed, you know. But they bail me out, you know. And and I remember that I had to take him to the airport the next day, and I had to go drive back all the way to Atchison, Kansas. But see, that's it. Sometimes That was the plan, you know. My father was freaking out because he thought, man, this guy is not gonna go back to Atchison, you know. He might do something different. But I did. I took the car back, you know, and I stayed there for a year and a half, and you know, learn English, finish my the year and a half of high school that I was doing there, you know. As I was saying, you know, school was not a problem. It was my behavior in school, my attitude, you know, my conduct and all that. And when I went back to Mexico City, you know, I continued going to school. And my father gave me a car, you know. He gave me a 69 four-door Rambler, you know. And man, I love that car, you know. You know, I bought a stereo, you know, with my 8 tracks and all that stuff. I don't know if you guys remember those, you know. And, you know, one night, I got home and late, drunk. And, you know, I used to live in an apartment building, you know, where all my family lived there, you know. My grandmother, my godfather, aunts, uncles, I mean, you name it. In the house next door, my great-grandparents lived there. The whole family, that united we were, you know. And for an alcoholic like me, I mean, that was real bad, because I hurt all of them, a lot of people there in the process. And I remember that night I got home and I was angry. I was angry because the servant that took care of the place, you know, he will wash all the cars except mine. And the reason he didn't do that is because my father told him not to do it, you know, because I would leave the car full of bottles and cigarette butts and all kinds of stuff. So that night I'm angry. I'm looking for him, and I found him, you know, and I started chasing him all over the parking lot, you know. And I made a big deal out of it, and my grandmother heard me, you know. And she came down, and she's like, son, calm down, what's your problem, you know. And I'm like, well, nobody loves me here, you know. I'm drunk, you know. But wait a minute, you don't have to hit that guy, you know, just because they don't wash your car, and blah, 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 and trying to calm me down, and all this. You know, I sometimes think about this and just, you know, I remember that I said, Grandma, you know, nobody loves me here. I'm gonna continue partying. You know, I gotta go. And she's like, no, son, don't go anywhere. So I got in my car and I start backing up, you know, and I don't realize that I never closed the door, so I run over my grandma, you know. And wow, when I look, she's on the floor, you know. And all of the sudden, you know, I've already awakened the whole building. My you know, my father is down there, my mother, my uncles, and they all want to beat the crap out of me, you know. But I really don't know how my grandma, she got up and defended me. You know, she defended, I broke her collarbone. I don't know how she got up, but she did, you know. And I remember, you know, they sent me upstairs and said, go to bed, and we don't want to see you, you know. I became this ugly drunk, you know. And next day, you know, I'm talking to my mother, and she's screaming at me, you know, you want to kill my mother, what the hell is wrong with you, blah, 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 you know. So I had to go downstairs, apologize, and cried, you know, and I said, mother, grandmother, you know, I'm sorry, you know, the classic, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again, I promise you, I won't drink anymore. You know, lots of promises that I broke, you know. And I was only 17 years old. So this time they're very angry at me, you know. So they sent me to see my godfather. My godfather was a family doctor. So he did a general checkup on me. And for the first time, I was talking to someone about alcoholism and drugs. And I told him, you know, everything that I was doing for the first time. And, you know, after the checkup and after talking to him, he's like, okay, I got two suggestions for you. And I said, okay, well, tell me. And he said, the first one is that I want you to go see the movie. I don't know if you're all familiar with this movie, but he told me to go see the movie Clockwork Orange. You know, about these druggies and drunks, you know, that get into a lot of trouble. And that was his first suggestion, you know. And the second suggestion was that he said, son, the foreskin of your penis is too long. You need to be circumcised, you know. And I'm like, oh, my God. I said, son, you know, did you need to be circumcised? I said, but I'm 18 years old. What's wrong with you, you know? He said, you know, I'm in trouble. I have to be obedient. So he said, we need to make a schedule for this, you know, surgery. And I said, okay, well, what the hell, you know? I have to be obedient. So I went. I get circumcised. You know, I walked out. I'm pissed, of course. I understand that. I walk out the damn hospital, you know, and he gave me a bunch of pills, you know, because of, so I would take them for, you know, pain and all the stuff that goes with it, you know. And I'm taking all this medication, you know, while this is going on. And I remember that I'm being obedient, you know. He told me, he said, you cannot drink while you're taking this stuff. I said, okay. So I think that was like a Saturday. Then, you know, the weekend then came again, and a friend of mine called me and said, Jorge, you know, I'm going out with my girlfriend, and her cousin from out of town is coming, you know, and she's hot. And I said, yeah, oh, no, you know, why not? So I go out, you know, and of course, all the medication and all that, I put it aside. I said, I'm not drinking this shit. You know, I'm not taking this anymore, you know, because I want to drink. I want to have fun, you know. So I put it on the side, and I went out, started drinking, you know, having fun. Yeah, you know, partying. On my way home, you know, I'm in the rear, you know, of a back seat of this Beetle car, you know, Beetle. And I'm making out with this girl, you know. And everything's fine until I get this, the most painful erection of my life, you know. And I'm like, oh, wow, man. And I tell the girl, you know what, just move to the side, please, you know. Leave me alone, you know. And of course, you know, my friend is laughing, you know, and the other two laughing, and I'm like, wow, you know, this disobedience again, you know. I should have followed the suggestion of my godfather. I remember when I went to see him, you know, a few days later, you know, so he will remove the stitches. He's like, son, there are some missing. I said, you don't want to know. You know, my life was like that for many years, you know, doing stupid things, being disobedient, drinking, and but you know what, I managed to go to school and work and all this stuff, you know. I remember coming back to Florida, and I went to Vero Beach study. I graduated from Flight Safety Academy. I became a pilot, and when I was done, you know, I fell on top of the world, you know. my ego was this big, and I knew that I was going to get a good job and money and all the things that we alcoholics think about, you know, prestige, good-looking women, nice cars, and all that stuff. And the only problem is that my alcoholism was already, well advanced. And I remember going back to Mexico and asking my father if I could take a vacation, you know, after all the studying that I had done. And I remember going on vacation, and it was supposed to be just for a few weeks, you know, but it took months, really, because after that, it was very hard for me to get back on track. You know, I started drinking and trying to go to school and, you know, try to finish, because I had just graduated. Now it was time for me to look for a job. And at the time, you know, Mexican Airlines, they were hiring pilots, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to make it, and I'm going to do it, and procrastinating and drinking, and I would study, and then I would go out drinking, and, you know how we are, you know, set up for failure, you know, moments of sobriety or periods of sobriety always followed by worse relapse, you know, that's what happened. And so then all of a sudden, you know, I have to get a job, and I remember that I had to do some flying time, because I had to keep my license current, and I, because of my drinking and my procrastination, I wasn't doing that. So what happened is I end up getting a job as a flight attendant. You know, I said, well, let me get in there, and then I'll study, and then I'll make sure I get that job that I'm looking for. And I did, you know, but when working as a flight attendant was also, you know, lots of drinking, lots of partying, going from city to city, place to place, you know. So I remember, you know, one day I had a flight, an early flight, and I got up, you know, I was kind of still buzzed from the night before, and went to work. I don't know, I made it on time this time, and even had a chance for time for a shoe shine, you know, and then I went to the aircraft, you know. And then the senior flight attendant was there. He greeted me. Hey, how are you? How you doing? Hi, you know, my name is Jorge. He looked at me, you know, up and down. He's like, you must be a rookie. And I said, why? You know, I've been doing this for like 3 or 4 months. He said, well, you know, rookies play jokes upon themselves. And I said, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, you're wearing a brown shoe and a black shoe. You know, and I looked at him and, oh my God, you know, he's right. I'm wearing a brown shoe and a black shoe, man. And all I'm thinking is about the shoe shine boy, you know. He used black polish on my brown shoe, you know. He ruined my brown shoe, and I was angry, you know. Fortunately for me, you know, this guy had an extra pair of black shoes that he gave me, you know. He was one of those long flights, like a four-day flight. And I remember at the end of that four-day flight, I gave him his shoes back. He said, no, you can keep them, you know. I don't want them anymore. You know, if you would have been on an aircraft with me, and we would have had probably an emergency landing, and I would have been able to open the exit door and inflate the chute, you know, I probably would have been the first one out that door, you know, instead of helping you guys out. That was how selfish, you know, and self-centered that was. You know, I got to Orlando in 1990. And because of a geographical change, you know, I came here with that, with the idea, you know, of a new life, you know, being responsible, not, you know, not drinking, having a family, a house, you know, like the American dream, you know. The only problem was that, you know, I didn't know that I have to go through AA to get that American dream, really. And I came here, and in 3 years, I got into a lot of trouble. I married a girl. She lives here in Orlando, but she was from Kansas. You know, again, I don't know why, but, you know, and married her for 3 years. And I did the best that I could, but I was on the at the end of my drinking career, and I got into a lot of trouble. I got a DUI, and it was November of '90, and then I got I ended up going three times to 33rd Street, and the last one was the worst one, you know, with the battery on a police officer and a DUI. So when I was in jail, you know, for the first time, when I was given the opportunity to take a shower and brush my teeth and all that stuff, I started crying in the shower, you know. I guess we all have those moments when, you know, we really say enough is enough. And I thought about my family. You know, what would my parents think about me? You know, after all the education they've given me and I'm in jail, you know. So I was determined to do something about it. I just didn't know what, you know, how, but I knew that that AA worked for other people. So as soon as I got out of there, I went looking for an AA group, and I found one. It was right around the corner from where I live. It was a Spanish-speaking group, and that's where I got sober. And I remember, you know, my first meeting, you know, people talking to me, and I'll never forget the first things that they told me. They said, you know, Jorge, try to practice honesty about not picking up a drink or a drug, and come back tomorrow and tell us how you're feeling, how you're doing. And I remember I did that, you know, and the alcoholics of my group, what they did is they gained my confidence, and the truth is that I didn't even know what I was doing, but I was talking to them before the meetings, after the meetings, and what I was doing the fifth step. You know, I had not written the fourth step, but I was doing the fifth step because I told them everything that was bothering me. And I remember that for the first time I felt relieved. You know, all that anger that I had. You know, I remember my first meetings. I was in here, and I was thinking what kind of a revenge, you know, about revenge, retaliation. You know, the cops beat me up, but, you know, I deserve that, but I wanted to go after the cops, and, you know, that was wrong, you know, but they made me see that that was wrong, and that they even called me, one of them, he said, you know, you're nothing but a coward, I said, you know, why don't you face reality, and that was the truth. But the first time, you know, I really, really looked at myself, and I said, you know what? This is the truth. I have to face reality. And but it, as stubborn as I, you know, I've been and I was at the time, you know, I wanted to do it my way. I didn't want to get a sponsor. You know, the only good thing I did is that I kept coming back and talking to them. And I don't remember even reading the book. Oh yeah, I read the one, Living Sober. That's the one that I read. I remember now. You know, it wasn't the Blue Book or any of the 12 and 12. It was the Living Sober. So I got some ideas from there to how to, you know, stay sober. And I did that because the first thing I did was I went looking for I went to Sports Authority. I remember I bought a bench, a set of weights, and I started working out. You know, I knew that I could do that. You know, that AA will take care of me physically and mentally. I mean, mentally and in a spiritual way. You know, I knew I had to do something about, you know, my being fit again. You know, because I wanted to do something about it. And I did it. You know, I kept coming back. Finally, you know, after 9 months, I asked somebody to sponsor me, and he did. You know, when you ask, most of the time they say yes. And I did a lot of service work in my Spanish-speaking group. You know, I became the coffee maker. You know, I became the literature rep, the secretary, chairperson, all that in the 5 years that I was there. And I think that helped me a lot stay sober. You know, I don't know if you guys, a lot of you, you know, when asked to do some service, you know, I don't know if what kind of a feeling you get, but I really, really enjoyed it. You know, I know that I wanted to do it, and I would go and, you know, talk to the guys and do it, you know. And I think that's when you practice, when you start practicing the principles of AA. Because, you know, serving coffee, you know, to a bunch of drunks, it was not easy, you know. But, well, you know, when I got sober, you know, you had to memorize how they drank their coffee, you know. And you would make the coffee, you know, and then go with the tray and give them the coffee, you know. And sometimes if you put too much sugar, you'll hear about that stuff, you know. Or if you didn't have enough sugar, you know, or stuff like that. And then I remember being there for 5 years. But it was one of those groups, you know, like, I don't know if you've been to any of those groups where, you know, you can have a nice meeting, but you can also have very sick meetings. And you can have some people that are very sick, 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 you know, that they just mess up the whole thing. And what happened in that group is that at the time, I remember there were only two Spanish-speaking groups. But right after they closed down that place, we had like four or five more AA groups. You know, what happened is that some people got a resentment and they left. And I was the only one left there, you know. I remember I was the one closing down the place. I tried to keep it open and I couldn't. I used all the money that we had. And I remember going to meetings and opening the door, and sometimes nobody will show up. But, you know, the person that benefited the most out of that, it was me. Because I was there, and I would read the book. You know, those were the only times that I would read that book. And then I closed down the place, and I said that, I got angry again. And I said, this AA doesn't work. And I stayed away from meetings for like 2 weeks. And, you know, in 2 weeks, you go crazy. You go insane. You know how it is, you know. You go insane sober. And I did. So I went looking for another group. And I went to the Crossroads group, Southside Club. And I spent there 2 years. Got me another sponsor. Continue working the program. You know. And then they closed down that group. And then you start wondering, is it Jorge or what the hell is going on? But I had already come here one time and I really didn't like it. you know, I came to Central and I thought I was in the wrong place because I found it too spiritual, you know. I said, I think this is a church. That was my first thought. And I was going to get up and leave. But I had been told that you don't get up and leave, you stay the whole meeting. And I remember that I did. You know, and of course, I was not used to these kind of meetings. But you know what? That's exactly what I needed. Because, as I had said, you know, I had been in places, in groups where some of the meetings were very, very sick. And I needed this, you know. After 7 years of sobriety, of what I thought I had sobriety, you know, I needed peace of mind, you know. And I remember that I asked Roy to sponsor me here, and he did. He knew exactly what was wrong with me, you know. He asked me, you know, what is it that you do during the day? And I told him. And I thought that by, you know, saying the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer, that was enough. I said it every day, you know, before the meeting and after the meeting. But he said, no, Jorge, that's not enough. You know, I really didn't have a contact with my higher power. You know, it was very limited. And so he gave me some spiritual books, told me to read, and I did. He also told me to find time, you know, to make some time for my prayer and my meditation, and I did. And my life started to change. I started feeling better, you know, because I did question this program many times. You know, I was like, is this sobriety? I don't like it, you know. But I'm glad that, you know, I followed those directions. You know, I think AA has disciplined me, you know, in many areas of my life, and one of them was in a spiritual way. I know that I'm more obedient today. You know, I'm not that person that I was telling you about, you know. And it's all because of what I've learned here. It's all because of what, you know, you guys have been teaching me, because of what I've seen, you know, all the people do here. You know, we have a lot of examples here. I remember also when I got here. He's not here tonight, but he says it all the time. His name is Johnny Serrano. He would say, I love AA. And I was like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Huh? He loves AA. Well, the thing is that I didn't even know what love was. That's the truth. Or the people that would say, I'm a grateful alcoholic. I said, what the hell? Being grateful about being an alcoholic, you know? But of course, I was still, you know, full of anger. You know, I remember when I first came here, you know, I thought this was very degrading. I didn't want anybody to know that I was in AA, but when my family found out, they were the happiest people in Mexico, you know? You know, but I thought it was bad, you know? But the truth is that, you know, today everything that I am, that I have, it's because of AA, because of God, because of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of the fellowship. You know, that's the truth. You know, I haven't done anything out of the extraordinary. I'm just, you know, I work more than ever. You know, I don't have days off. I work every day. And that's because, you know, I wanted to do that, you know, and I think, sometimes I think, you know, that I'm glad that I do that because every day, you know, I get up and I thank God that I have a job, that I have a place where I can go, you know, and you know, that I can work, and that I have a place where I can sleep, a car that I can drive, you know, clothing and all that stuff. And maybe that's why, you know, I have to work every day, and it doesn't matter. I do it, you know. I don't complain. You know, I get up every morning and I go to the gym and I go to work, come to AA, talk to alcoholics every day. And you know me. You've seen me here, sometimes one meeting, sometimes two, sometimes three. You know, I really, really, today I can tell you that I do love AA, you know. I am a grateful alcoholic today. You know, the other thing I found out is, you know, when I was in that Spanish-speaking group, I remember I used to put more money in the basket. Now that I make more money, I don't put that much money in the basket. You know, why? Why does that shit happen? You know? Sometimes I think about that stuff. But you should have seen my Spanish-speaking group, man. You know, this is luxury here. You know, from where I came from. But, you know, it's just hard work, perseverance. That's another thing. You know, I've learned here, you don't give up. No matter what, just don't give up. You keep coming here and coming here. You know, I've had a rough year. You know, but I'm here every night. You know, I was, one day after I said my prayers, you know, if it was followed by another selfish prayer, you know, I said, God, how about winning the lotto, you know? And then I smiled and I said to myself, Jorge, how are you going to win the lotto? You don't even play lotto. You know? And after that, you know, I said, Jorge, you've already won the lotto. You know, just being sober, being in AA, that's, you know, that's winning the lotto. I never saw it that way, you know, and I am very grateful, you know, that Wayne asked me to talk to you tonight. I hope I didn't offend anybody, but that's, you know, what happened to me, how I got sober, you know, what I've done and what I continue doing, and I'm going to continue coming to Central, you know, and thank you very much for giving me this chance.